You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Like I mentioned before, I am traveling this week, so we're going to have a couple episodes that are special episodes, not really about what's going on with the team at this very moment, but just taking a bigger picture look at some things. And there might also be a couple days without a show. Today, we're going to look back. It was a conversation I had with Patrick Hayes before the season about whether the Pistons should have drafted Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Trey Burke, how we thought then, obviously what we think now, and the same about Justice Winslow versus Stanley Johnson. Joining me again is Patrick Hayes. He was on Locked On Pistons earlier to talk about the Flint Pistons connection, what Flint basketball means. I highly suggest checking out that podcast if you haven't heard it already. And now we're going to get into a little more Pistons-specific talk and look back. I think between the two of us, when we were writing for Piston Powered, we do our draft boards every year, but there were 2 years where we had very strong opinions, each one of us, about who the Pistons should take in a year where they took somebody else. For me, that was 2013, when I very strongly thought they should take Trey Burke over Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. For you, that was last year, when you very strongly thought they should take Justice Winslow over Stanley Johnson. I think history, at least as far as we've seen it so far, has been much more kind to your pick than mine, although I would like to add that you also thought the Pistons should draft Trey Burke over Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and I also thought the Pistons should draft Justice Winslow over Stanley Johnson, so we're in this together, but I think we each took our real big stand in different years. You picked the better one. So let's start with the more recent one. You are very high on Justice Winslow. I was looking this up before we talked, and you can find on Piston Powered, we both did our draft boards for the Pistons, and I had Justice Winslow number 6, and the only players ahead of him were already off the board. I actually had Stanley Johnson number 7, but I did think there was a clear drop-off between the two. Mm-hmm. Your draft board, I'm going to read the whole thing, and we went, I asked everybody when they wrote this to go, you know, at least through the lottery. I went through the Pistons' second-round pick, everybody else did top 14. Here is your entire draft board. Number 1, Justice Winslow. Number 2, disappointment. And that's it. So,
God, why did you let me write for that site for so long?
Oh, well, your wages were right. So now if you look back at this a year later, has anything changed about your thinking on why you preferred Justice Winslow so strongly over everybody, including Stanley Johnson?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that I think if statistically, if you look at what Winslow did his rookie year, it was underwhelming. But I think, you know, if you watched the Heat closely, he was a really key player for them. You know, it was a bit role, and so I think with Wade gone this year, we'll get a much better idea of what kind of potential Justice Winslow has. But I think what he showed his rookie season is kind of the reason I was so high on him. I'm not an anti-stat person whatsoever, but I think we all, to some extent, use the eye test to, you know, evaluate players. We have players whose styles resonate with us differently, and it doesn't necessarily make anyone right or wrong. But the thing that, you know, I loved about watching Justice Winslow at Duke, and I've loved about him in the NBA, is he's a really smart player, especially for his age. You don't see the combination of kind of defensive instincts and toughness, in a player that young, particularly a player on at a wing position, and you know, I think offensively, you know, some of his weaknesses were magnified in Miami. You know, he's not necessarily going to be a great shooter or, you know, creator. You know, and his offensive output was probably inflated somewhat at Duke because they had, you know, Okafor and, you know, some other, you know, other talented college players who, you know, made it easier on Winslow in a way that, you know, he's not going to find in the NBA. But I think if you look at what he did at Duke that I really connected with and liked, it, you know, it was his defensive ability that, you know, one of, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green are two of my favorite players to watch in the NBA right now. And it's just because, you know, those guys could literally defend and smother any position on the floor. You know, there's certainly matchups that can be better or worse for them. But I look at Justice Winslow as in that mold, you know, developing into a guy who is just, you know, when you talk about a good defensive team, you know, if you take Draymond Green off the Warriors, does anyone think the Warriors are going to be a good defensive team? You know, there's certainly a couple of guys who are decent individual defenders, but that team became, you know, an elite defensive unit because of what Draymond Green does, both with his ability and his intelligence. And the Spurs are, you know, the same way. You know, so many of their, I mean, half their roster is like 45 years old, and you throw Kawhi Leonard in, and all of a sudden, you know, that's an elite lockdown unit. And it's no disrespect to other people on their team who are solid defensively, you know, Danny Green and some others, but what Kawhi Leonard is able to do really just fuels everything. And I did then, and I still view Winslow as that, you know, game changing perimeter defensive presence that can, you know, just transform your team's identity. And, you know, that's also, I'm actually higher on Stanley Johnson than I was, you know, when they drafted him. You know, it's still no disrespect to Stanley Johnson. I think he, you know, he did some things during his rookie season that were very impressive. And seriously, he's a tank. If you look at his upper body, you know, that he looks like he's going to be one of the strongest players in the NBA. So no disrespect to him, but I think that Winslow is, kind of a once in a generation type of skill set defensively, and I still think it was a mistake for them to pass that up.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you. It's so hard to add much to the discussion now, only 1 year later, because both players, I at least for what I expected, sort of look like what I expected as rookies. So a lot of times you fall back on, you know, what the pre-draft analysis was, and because they look like rookies. Like, yes, I still see some of that game-changing defensive potential from Justice Winslow, but he didn't have that yet, I didn't think, in Miami. He was a good defender, and a very, very good defender for a rookie, but it's rare for a rookie to come in and make that type of impact. So that's no knock on him. He's still young, and, you know, like any player drafted in that range, you expect them to continue developing. You don't expect them to come in as a ready-made product. And, you know, that's also true for Stanley Johnson, who is younger, but had more rough patches with the Pistons than Justice Winslow did, because I don't think Stanley Johnson had either end of the court he could rely on to be a reliable contributor. He was up and down on both ends. Sometimes he looked good on both ends. Sometimes it was just one. Sometimes it was the other. Sometimes it was neither. And that made it a little more turbulent. But there were a couple players who I thought, you know, really either, I would say basically hit at or near their best case scenarios of where they looked in the draft. One is Miles Turner from the Pacers. And the other is Devin Booker with the Suns, who went into the NBA not having to have done much at Kentucky, because Kentucky was a juggernaut and didn't need him to do more, but was a little bit more dynamic with the ball in his hands than just a spot-up three-point shooter with the Suns. Did either of those guys, in hindsight, and, you know, I think there's logic in evaluating the draft in hindsight and logic in evaluating the draft based on what you reasonably could have seen at the time, but just in hindsight, do either of those guys or maybe anybody else give you pause on, you know, who you would have taken besides Justice Winslow?
you know, I think Devin Booker is clearly, you know, at 19 already, you know, based on what he did the second half of last season, you know, looks like a prototypical star NBA shooting guard right now. So I don't think there's any argument to be made that you would still take Winslow or over Booker in any way, shape, or form. You know, what he did at his age is just insane. You know, and I compare him to, you know, like a Jimmy Butler type player right now, who, you know, was a polished college player coming into the league and still needed, you know, significant time in the NBA to develop into what he's become now. And you know, I think you can say the same thing about Klay Thompson. It took him a couple of years to become as good as he is, and you know, Devin Booker looked as good as those players, or at least in the realm, you know, as a 19-year-old. So, you know, I think 100 times out of 100, you would, if you have hindsight, you would take Booker, you know, over Winslow in a second. You know, as for Miles Turner, you know, he's a fun player to watch, and I think he's certainly way better than myself and a lot of other people who pay attention to the draft, you know, gave him credit for at the time. But I'm not there. I'm still pretty high on Winslow, obviously. So I wouldn't say that it's conclusive in that case that you would, you know, take Miles Turner over him. But, you know, I think he's a really good player and really good prospect.
Yeah, I'm with you on both, where I think Turner worked his way up into the same range as Winslow, and I'd have to think long and hard about it if I were drafting in hindsight for the Pistons, especially because, and this would probably give the nod to Winslow, if they're in the same tier, Winslow as a wing is probably a better fit than Turner, who I think once he gets going is going to be a center, and Andre Drummond's obviously going to be the center in Detroit for the foreseeable future. But Booker, I think in hindsight, he'd be the choice. He's, like I said, the best case scenario of what I thought he could have been going into the draft. We know he could make spot up 3-pointers, and it seemed like he had the profile to do more. He just hadn't shown it. He didn't have an opportunity at Kentucky, and I tend to lean more toward players who force their way into proving that they can do more. Like, if he were so good when he was at Kentucky, they wouldn't have asked so little of him. So he wasn't so good, but he was still pretty good, and they could have asked more for him, it seems, and gotten more. But there's just so little to go on right now. So let's go back to 2013, when there is a lot more that we can say, and I think this one's pretty wrapped up that I was wrong, and we can say that pretty conclusively right now, if not all the way conclusively. The Pistons drafted Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, one pick before Trey Burke, and I also pulled up our draft boards from that one. I had, we'll just run through the top 10. My top 10 was Nerlens Noel, who was off the board, Otto Porter, who was off the board, number 3, Trey Burke, who was available, number 4, Victor Oladipo, who was off the board, number 5, Ben McLemore, who was off the board, number 6, Anthony Bennett, who was off the board, number 7, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who they took, number 8, Shabazz Muhammad, who was available. Number 9, CJ McCollum, who was available. Number 10, Michael Carter-Williams, who was available. And then you had, did you do a board that year? Maybe I don't have yours, but I know you were pretty high on. Oh, here you are. Number 1, Victor Oladipo, who was unavailable. Number 2, Otto Porter, who was unavailable. Number 3, Ben McLemore, who was unavailable. Number 4, Nerlens Noel, who was unavailable. Number 5, Trey Burke, who was available. Number 6, Anthony Bennett, who was unavailable. Number 7, CJ McCollum, who was available. Number 8, Shabazz Muhammad, who was available. Number 9, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who they took. And number 10, Cody Zeller, who was available. So if they were going to pass on Trey Burke, I think you would have done better than me in getting C.J. McCollum and some Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, although you also had Shabazz Muhammad ahead of Caldwell-Pope, which is a pretty big mistake in hindsight. But let's talk about the big one. Trey Burke and Caldwell-Pope. We both wanted Trey Burke. We both felt that Caldwell-Pope was fine, but Trey Burke was clearly the better choice. I think me more so than you thought Trey Burke was. I think that I saw a larger gap, and obviously we were both wrong about that aspect of it. Do you think that's more Caldwell-Pope exceeding our expectations or Burke coming underneath them? For me, it's Caldwell-Pope's been in very much in the range of what I expected, and it's Burke just completely disappointing. Is that the same for you, or did Caldwell-Pope also not match what you expected coming into the draft?
Caldwell-Pope is a player in the NBA, and that's basically like there is nothing. There's nothing I can pick out about him that strikes me as exceptionally dynamic.
His defense on point guards is like in the
Pretty specialized.
Well, even on shooting guards, I mean, but his ability to cross.
Like he's an okay defender, which is what we knew.
Okay defender, right? Is that all you're going to give him?
I mean, he's okay to slightly more than okay. Are you going to put him on an all defense team?
No.
So you know, essentially, that's what we knew about him coming into the league was he would probably be an above adequate defender, which he's been. Streaky shooter, offensive game that is out of control a lot. Overall, not a player that I hate having on the roster, but not someone who in any way strikes me as, you know, irreplaceable. I think it's 100%, that Burke has not has been a disappointment as an NBA player, you know, particularly his shooting. I thought he'd be a way better shooter. I will say I do. Now his flop will make me go back to my better judgment, which was to be harsher on any U of M star, which my support for Burke leading up to that draft went against, you know, everything I stand for. But I did. I really enjoyed watching him, at Michigan. I thought he was a really good college basketball player, and I thought he had a skill set that translated offensively. You know, he was always going to be kind of a wreck on defense in the NBA. I think he'd probably try hard, but you know, he's small and he's not particularly fast. But the shooting, the basketball IQ, those things should have translated, especially on a team like Utah, which he seemed like a really good fit for. So I'm not sure what the issue is. And, you know, I'm not overly optimistic that his change of scenery in Washington will fix anything, considering, you know, the chaotic mess that team always seems to be. So, it's disappointing because he should have been better, and I can't quite figure out why he's not. But, I think it's clearly the answer. Caldwell-Pope has just done what everyone thought he would probably do. There's nothing he's displayed yet that has said, oh, that guy is going to be an all-star. It's just another year of kind of an underwhelming draft. There's certainly guys that, McCollum is the guy who's the dynamic player out of that bunch, and it's not even close. It's the same thing with the Winslow Johnson debate. You know, Booker was clearly the player that's superior. He wasn't even really in a conversation for the Pistons, and to my knowledge, McCollum wasn't a guy that was highly on their radar either. It is what it is. They didn't come out of it with, you know, players I would consider awful, but certainly not as good as they potentially could have been right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's Trey Burke. What he's done, it's baffling because I mean, his defense is basically at his worst case, reasonably expected scenario, but his offense is far below even what I thought his worst case was. How he can't shoot from the outside all of a sudden, I don't understand, because he frequently shot from NBA range at Michigan, and he seemed to be strong enough where that was no problem. And his ability to navigate the pick and roll, to be an expert floor vision and use that and leverage a good enough shot, like, it's not there. He's just, you know, he's at his best sort of as a one-on-one scorer with not awful efficiency when he does that for that skill, but that's a skill that lends itself to often to awful efficiency. And so, no, I don't expect to turn around in Washington either. Like, I, not that he can't, not that he doesn't have any talent, and not that it's completely out of the question, but I think he's proven himself over a large enough sample to be a subpar NBA player, and it is baffling. And I'm with you, CJ McCollum would have been the right pick. And that's, you know, obviously in hindsight you can critique almost every draft pick because that's just how it works. The Pistons came out ahead with Caldwell Pope. I'm probably higher on him than you. And I do want to bring up one other thing, why he's a real plus asset. And I don't know if we want to give Joe Dumars credit for this foresight or not. I sort of don't. I don't think he deserves it. And I, you know, not that I dislike Joe Dumars and maybe sometimes even look for reasons to give him credit. At the time, I thought, and still think to a degree, that the Pistons, one of the reasons that they took Kentavious Caldwell-Pope over Trey Burke is because Joe Dumars knew his job was on the line and the Pistons needed a point guard who could help them win quicker. And point guards can take a little while to develop, even ones as who appeared as skilled as Trey Burke. And so the Pistons honed in on, you know, a wing player because that's where they could use somebody who they could find somebody who could provide more immediate help. And they traded for Brandon Jennings, which another disastrous trade, giving up Chris Middleton. Again, that's also in hindsight. I don't know if it would have been reasonable to have an idea Chris Middleton would be so good at the time.
In fairness, I think we hated the Middleton pick too.
Oh yeah. So. Oh yeah. I did not like the Middleton pick. I just thought he did not show enough at Texas A&M. And like the whole thing was like, the Pistons were saying, oh, he was hurt at Texas A&M. That's why he didn't play as well. Well, even before his injury, he wasn't that good. So, like, I just didn't see it. Oops. He ended up pretty good. We love the Kim English pick, though. We were all about that one.
You know, I got to start taking, like, how entertaining a tweet or someone is out of evaluating their NBA prospects.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. 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 I don't know what else to say that. Yeah, I mean, I did like his skill set. I liked the way he played and, you know, the fact that he could be an outside shooter and also somebody tough enough to play power forward in college when he's really like a natural shooting guard. But let's not revisit why we were wrong about Kim English and Chris Middleton. We're here to talk about why we were wrong about Trey Burke and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And so the thing that maybe we should give Dumars credit for, I don't think he saw this coming. I mean, this is a pretty big thing. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's number one strength is probably that he's a solid shooting guard in an era where, one, NBA teams need more wings than ever because the trend now is you play your biggest wing at power forward and then you need additional wings to play shooting guard and small forward and you play small. And power forward is sort of that key pivotal position in that when you're trying to go small. You see with Draymond Green, obviously, the biggest example with the Warriors. A different generation, he might have been a small forward, but they move him down now. Regularly plays power forward, goes to center sometimes when they're trying to be especially dynamic. But to have a player like that at power forward is becoming the norm. And so where Draymond Green might have been a wing in a different era, you need more wings. There's also just a shortage of good wings. I think it's just a cyclical thing, just how it happens to go. While there's an abundance of good point guards, the number of teams that don't have either a good point guard or a young point guard that they're committed and invested in and believe in is so small. Like teams just that have no future point guard, nothing to be excited about. It's just tiny now. And so there would have been less value added. That's why I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's in line for a big contract extension or a big offer in free agency, whatever you think about his game, because he's a solid shooting guard and teams need those and don't have them. So I do think there was added value there. Do you give Dumars any credit for because he did admit, like, we honed in on shooting guards. I think it was because he was afraid to have a rookie point guard. But do you give him any credit for maybe seeing that this is the way the league's going and there's more value at this point in acquiring a wing than a comparable? And Trey Burke was not comparable, But if you accept that maybe at the time he looked comparable, that there's more value in having a comparable shooting guard rather than a point guard.
Yeah, no, I don't think that the logic was necessarily wrong. I think when you compound it with the Jennings trade, not that I was the world's biggest Brandon Knight fan, but you know that trade signifies that, you know, it wasn't that it was clearly a win now. Driving it rather than, you know, Dumars being any kind of visionary about the increasing need for or commodity of wings, because he traded a pretty good wing, or at least a one who's turned into a pretty good wing, and he traded a point guard that they'd invested, you know, significant time in, and even incrementally had improved some. And even if he didn't ever materialize into a point guard, as we've seen, you know, flashes of with Brandon Knight since he left Detroit, you know, at worst you have a productive wing in him too. So, you know, I think that trade clearly indicates that, you know, Dumars had other motivations for why they honed in on that position. You know, but you know, the logic in and of itself of taking Caldwell Pope was not wrong. You know, it's like anything else that Dumars has done. It's not necessarily one move that had faulty logic. It's a series of moves that, when you look at them together, you know, really torpedoed the team. And you know, that was the last kind of series of things he did that were really detrimental. You know, obviously a Pistons team with Caldwell Pope, Brandon Knight, and Chris Middleton at its disposal has a lot more flexibility, a lot more prospects, and that's not even necessarily you know, obviously it's using hindsight, but that's not, you know, redrawing a draft board or anything. That's a very realistic team they could have had, you know, along with their other, you know, along with Drummond, along with, you know, Monroe at the time. You know, not that team as assembled would have been, you know, insanely competitive, but it gave them enough pieces to be able to, you know, make a bigger move.
So let's end it with this, because I think we were both on the right track with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He fell within our range of expectations. We were very wrong about Trey Burke, me more so. And so I've tried to think about why, and it's tough. I don't know if I have a single reason. Maybe I should second guess Michigan players a little bit and the NBA success they can have. The thing that I come back to the most, that I circle the most, is that his athleticism wasn't quite there. And it made it just a little bit harder to translate. When your first step doesn't create as much space, it makes everything so much harder. And so his passing ability has not shined through. His outside shooting has not shined through like I thought it would. And I think the biggest thing is it's really hard to evaluate individuals at age 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and how good they'll be at their job years from now. And that's true in any profession. It's not unique to basketball. What's unique to sports is the way that you have to do it, that you're judged on drafts and it's forecasted what somebody's career will be like. And that can be hard. And, you know, whether it's somebody's work ethic or drive or mentality or focus or any of those things, that can be really hard to project in a young player and how that plays out. So I do still feel a little cautious about reading too much into one case and making grand judgments. But I think that's always the goal, is to search for what lessons you can learn, what grand judgments you can make. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening.